ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Burnout is absolutely real, and I felt it creeping quietly, often long before you realise what's happening.
Yep. Burnout is real, and it can be debilitating and really difficult to recover from. But what if there was a way to notice the early warning signs before things have gone too far? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong for ABC Radio National's This Work in Life, helping to make your work life better. In this episode, you'll learn ways to identify if you're heading towards burnout and what you can do to prevent it. Dr. Ben Searle is an organisational psychologist, consultant and researcher. Hello, Ben.
G'day, Lisa. How are you?
Good. Well, you had a former career as an academic at a university. What was your special area of research, Ben?
So, Lisa, my area for more than 20 years was occupational stress and sometimes even burnout.
And what led you to leave the university?
This is a bit embarrassing to acknowledge, Lisa, but I burned out, despite everything I knew about that.
And was it from stress, your other area of research then?
Well, look, all burnout is this nervous system in crisis due to prolonged chronic stress. So, yes, that was ultimately a stress issue.
Oh, no. So then, Ben, for yourself, and I'm sorry that you did burn out, you took time off, but that wasn't enough. So why was that and what did you do about that?
So we know that time off is not in itself enough to deal with moderate to severe level of burnout. In fact, if you look at some of the research, there's a famous study done by Westman and Eden in 1997 where they looked at people before, during, and after a three-week vacation. And what they found was that when they were on vacation, people's burnout levels went down, but straight after they came back, within 3 weeks, burnout was back at the same levels as before. And those were not people with severe levels of burnout. So past a certain point, rest alone is not going to do it. And there isn't a lot of resource out there for people who are trying to do that recovery. And that's what I found, and that's why I started digging into the research.
Oh, fascinating. And here we are. So listening in is Luke Martin, Senior Specialist and Clinical Spokesperson from Beyond Blue. G'day, Luke.
G'day, Lisa. Thanks for having me on.
Luke, Beyond Blue did a community poll on workplace burnout. How common is burnout, Luke?
Yeah, it's staggeringly common. Our survey of 1,000, nationally representative sample of Australian workers was that 1 in 2 Australian workers said they felt burnt out in the last 12 months. So this is a huge issue that a lot of people are dealing with.
That's crazy, Luke. What were some of the causes of burnout identified by those polled?
The survey was very strong that the root causes were lying in working conditions. So it's things around excessive workload, a lack of support from manager and the team, and inflexible working conditions. And so a lot of these tap onto those factors at work that we know can increase our risk for psychological harm. But people were really strong around the fact that, self-care is important, but I really want solutions that address those upstream factors, things in the workplace that are making lots and lots of people, lead to burnout.
And what's the clinical definition of burnout and how it's experienced by the person affected?
The classic symptoms are, a total emotional exhaustion where you feel you've just got nothing left to give, the tank is empty. A feeling of detachment or disengagement from the work you're doing and becoming more cynical about it. And also a reduced sense of personal efficacy, that you're just not feeling that sense of accomplishment anymore, or you've got to work a lot harder to perform at the same level. They're kind of the classic signs, but we did a piece of work with our Beyond Blue community that found a whole range of other earlier signs. And I think though picking up those early signs is so important because, as Ben said, once we get a severe burnout, recovery can be a really hard journey. And so some of the other signs we picked up were things like emotional reactivity, just being more irritable, angry, on edge, physical ailments like headaches, feeling constantly fatigued, getting sick more often, not being able to concentrate or focus or make decisions as sharply as you used to, a loss of joy in the work, and just this general feeling of just not coping. Like, I can't handle another thing on my plate. I'm hanging on by a thread. And when things don't go to plan or something unexpected happens, I'm not sure I've got the resources to cope with that at the moment. I've just got no buffer to deal with unexpected things happening.
I actually wrote a post on LinkedIn asking people about their experiences of burnout and in particular the early warning signs that we're going to drill into. So here's small business owner Ruhi. Have a listen here.
I loved rocking up to work and doing what I love. And my very first early warning signs that I was burnt out is that I had no energy to wake up in the morning. I kept saying no to things I loved and projects that usually would really excite me. And it was a huge kind of awakening. Or am I anxious? Is this depression? And then slowly coming to the realization that this was burnout.
And this is social worker Ray.
It really affected me in various ways. I remember my mental health was declining. I felt very depressed and anxious. I didn't want to come into work. I remember having to call in sick quite a lot because I often didn't have the energy to go to work, didn't feel like I was myself. I also noticed a fluctuation in my weight. I lost a lot of weight because of how I was feeling. It also impacted my relationship with my family, especially my daughter.
Luke, what are you hearing there?
Yeah, I think we're really hearing the reality of burnout. It kind of can take your spark away. It's a really, it can have a really pervasive impact across lots of areas in your life. And often people can get in a position where they feel a bit trapped in those difficulties. They can't really see a way through the challenges they're facing. So they might be in a workplace where they don't feel they can influence it. So they need the job. And so they're not able to take time off. They need the income. And it can put people in a real cycle where their mental health starts to become impacted. And particularly I heard in a couple of comments there, once that external stress becomes internalized and we turn against ourselves and we can have a lot of, shame around our inability to cope in the environment we're in, once that self-critical voice starts dialing up, that's when things like depression can enter the picture as well. And burnout and depression can co-occur.
Ben, your new research is helping to identify the early warning signs of burnout. What did participants tell you about their experiences?
The experience of burnout does vary a lot from person to person, not just in when some of these symptoms emerge, but also in the way some of those symptoms present, right? So in terms of the detachment phenomenon, for instance, that some people will describe it more as sort of a loss of engagement, a loss of that spark. Other people will experience more sort of interpersonal disconnection. People may not be recognizing themselves and their condition when they look at some of these symptoms.
Ben, can you run us through the early warning signs that you've identified?
They were things like that loss of the spark, that loss of enthusiasm, not just for work, but for other things, that people seem to be shutting down their connection to the world, their enthusiasm for activities, work and non-work. There was also some indication that people were starting to crave more alone time, and that was an indicator of that disconnection side of detachment, that people are starting to pull back from other people. When we look at descriptions of burnout and it talks about this phenomenon of cynicism, what that's describing is something that might well be happening later in the process. Exhaustion was a big factor that people were reporting, particularly in the workplace. People were saying they were feeling sort of mentally exhausted. But there were a couple of things that came up that are not traditional burnout indicators. One of the big ones there was thinking about work while off duty. Now, this is something that has been associated with stress and ability to recover, and it's a problem because if you are finding that you're continuing to ruminate about work at the end of the workday, you're not getting enough rest and recovery from the end of one day to the start of the next. And that means that stress is much more likely to accumulate. You're less likely to put it all behind you and pick up fresh the next day. People just felt it was difficult to relax. I know this was an experience that I had. I noticed that I was sort of holding this tension in my abdomen. I was having difficulty sleeping. I just wasn't able to physically unwind at the end of the workday. And one last one is that people were starting to notice they were having difficulty concentrating. So that was another early sign that maybe some of the memory functions of the brain, executive function, our ability to manage attention, some of that starts to get compromised.
From your research, what are the easiest signs to recognise that you're heading towards burnout?
What you need to look for is, are you still looking forward to the same things? Are you feeling like there are things that are going on in your life, both at work and at home, are fun? And if you're starting to feel, I'm not really enjoying so many things anymore, I've stopped reading for pleasure, I've stopped going to movies, I'm not really enjoying things I'm seeing on TV, the hobbies I used to spend time on. If a number of these things are happening together, if you've got the loss of enthusiasm, if you keep finding yourself thinking about work, difficulty relaxing, if you're having difficulty concentrating and mentally exhausted, with some of those specifics, like it's not just the detachment, it's loss of enthusiasm for things outside of work, it's wishing you had more alone time, it's noticing that you're actually struggling to keep focused on things and you're starting to forget things you used to have no trouble remembering, that's when you might be able to make a difference. You might be able to go and do something. You might be able to go and tell someone, because those things are much less socially undesirable. It's much more acceptable to talk about those sort of things because of the shame that can build up with burnout. The later it gets, the later people realise something is wrong, the less comfortable people are in sharing that and maybe getting help. And the help that really needs to be done in most cases of burnout is organisational change. Certainly in our survey, that's what people were saying was most effective in managing their burnout, was when something significant was changed at work. They were able to get things done, whether those were sort of work accommodations or recognition of psychosocial hazards that needed to be addressed, or whether in some cases it was acknowledging, actually, this job isn't working for me at all and I need to go somewhere else.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National with me, Lisa Leong. My guests are organisational psychologist and researcher Ben Searle and clinical spokesperson for Beyond Blue, Luke Martin. Luke, you have some results from the Beyond Blue community poll about what workers want from their workplaces when it comes to addressing and preventing burnout. Do you want to go through some of these?
The number one thing people wanted was a reduced workload. That was by far and away the winner. Just give me less to do, please, was the cry. They're also wanting more support from their manager. I guess that really goes to the idea that relationship that a manager forms with a team can be one of the most protective factors at work. The way that they stand on the same side against the problems and talk about, okay, how are we going to approach this? What's hard about the work we do and how do we make it a little easier, or how do we at least support each other in the face of the hard bits that we can't change? And the third factor was more flexibility. And I think with that flexibility, it really taps into this core need we have at work around autonomy and agency. I kind of want to have a little bit of say in how I do my work. I want to be in charge of my day as much as possible.
What's interesting from Ben's research and your poll is that a lot of the factors are pointing towards systemic issues as opposed to individuals' issues, and yet we have things like resilience workshops. So, Luke, what was some of the reactions to things like resilience workshops, which really are focused on the individual?
Yeah, I think there was a very strong sense from our community poll that those individual level solutions scored the lowest in the list of options we gave people. And I'm always really, really careful around this finding, because I think, as Ben said, we know that those organisational level factors, addressing those root causes, is absolutely the most important thing we need to do. Get those conditions of work right and less people will become burnt out. Because even if an individual, you know, goes away and gets some really good treatment and support and you pop them back in an unreasonable working environment, they're likely to just burn out again. So the cycle continues. So those organizational level factors are so important to address. And at the same time, we know that there are skills that individuals can learn to cope with stress and reasonable levels of stress. So those individual level, you know, wellbeing workshops are in and of themselves not the solution, but they can be, you know, one piece in the puzzle where we're working at multiple levels to try and improve, you know, the wellbeing of a workforce.
Have you got anything that has moved the dial at an organisational level, Luke?
One, you know, very, very simple idea that I saw in a workplace was they created this idea of buffer. And so buffer was a little team check-in once a week where it was how much buffer do we each have heading into this week and a score out of 10. And so the team went around and shared where they were at. And what was clever about that was it put the focus on the external demands, like how much am I able to cope with? How much capacity do I have to take on new things? And that gave the team a chance to have a psychologically safe conversation around how work was going, but the focus was really on workload and how do we prioritize what we're doing this week. So we're doing the things that matter really well, and we might lower the priority for things that need to be done but just aren't as important. So that little mechanism of how do we create conversations to address these psychosocial risk factors seems to be what works quite well in that messy reality of implementation.
So Emma, who we heard from at the top of the program, she had this to say about what would have helped her.
Energy fades, curiosity dips, and what used to be above and beyond turns into just getting by. And one thing that can make a surprising difference is being seen. When someone acknowledges something specific that I've contributed, not just a generic good job, but a meaningful recognition of impact, it can reignite that sense of purpose, and it's a reminder that what I do matters.
Luke, any thoughts on this?
I love this. There's a psychological concept called mattering, and this is very protective for our mental health. When you feel valued in the workplace, when you feel seen, when you feel relied upon, when you feel that what you do there makes a contribution, that is associated with higher well-being at work. So those practices that team members can do with each other or a manager can do where we're noticing and affirming what other people do, that can be incredibly valuable, because at the end of the day, most of us, you know, when we're disgruntled at work, what sits at the core of that is the idea that I'm not valued here. And mattering is a way that we can kind of help people feel that your presence here does make a difference. And that's all we want at the end of the day.
Ben, what can colleagues or managers do when it comes to identifying early warning signs of burnout?
So it is part of the process that organisations should be using for trying to manage psychosocial hazards, that leaders should be checking in with their staff, that staff should be checking in with one another. There are things that leaders can do to just assess how people are doing. I love the idea of a buffer check. It is a nice, a safe way to talk about where people feel their coping resources are sitting, because ultimately a large part of the burnout experience is that sense of being overwhelmed and being unable to cope. And being able to recognise that early on is important, because it is within these teams at work that we need to start having conversations about what needs to change. What is it about workload that is too much? Where are we needing to prioritise our time? I've spoken to a number of leaders who've discovered long after the fact that some of their staff were putting a lot of time and effort into things that weren't all that important because of unclear communication. So yes, they need to focus on managing those psychosocial hazards really well, but they need to additionally recognise when are people starting to show these early warning signs of burnout. Burnout doesn't tend to happen just as a one-off. You don't tend to have an organisation where there is just one person struggling with it, because it tends to come from these situational factors. So if one person is showing burnout, then you should be checking in with the rest of the team. Are they starting to show the early warning signs?
Luke, so what can team members or colleagues do for each other to help prevent or minimise burnout?
My experience is those the earlier signs are a subtle withdrawal and a subtle disengagement. The colleague that's speaking up a bit less in meetings, they're chatting less in the Teams chat, they're not putting their hand up to help out with other projects, maybe they're eating lunch by themselves. These little small signs of withdrawal often can be something that goes on your radar. And then really, I think as colleagues, having those supportive conversations, a conversation of caring concern. It could be pointing out what you've noticed has changed. Often I find an easier way in is actually, again, to externalize it and talk about, man, you know, work has been pretty under the pump lately. How are you going with it?
Mm.
And so you're kind of normalizing that work affects all of us. And what's your particular experience of it can be a way to open that door to that conversation.
We ask our guests each week to leave us some tips that this working lifers can try for themselves. We call it Try This. Ben, you've designed a daily activity that people can do each day this month. You call it Recovember. Tell us about it.
Throughout the month of November, I am posting about different things that science has shown are effective for better day-to-day recovery. For example, a very recent one, I was talking about how mastery activities can be very rewarding. Engaging in some skill-based activity that gives you a sense of accomplishment or pride tend to be more effective in terms of daily recovery than passive activities like watching TV. Disadvantage is you need to have enough energy to invest in those things.
Okay, Luke, your turn. What are your tips for individuals to help prevent burnout?
Yeah, I think the first idea is because burnout can creep up on you without us noticing, it can help to put an appointment in your own calendar, whether it's weekly or monthly, for a self-check-in. And that's really just a quick 2 minutes where you're saying, what are my stress levels? What are my energy levels? What's my general kind of satisfaction with work and life? And are there any areas that are important to me in life that I've neglected or overlooked, you know, in the last week or the last month? And coming up with a bit of a plan for the next month to course correct. So those little check-in moment, so you're not letting that, you know, feeling creep up on you without it, you being aware of it. Another idea is this is really lovely idea called, you know, find a clearing. And so a clearing is this idea that we need a little pocket in our day where we don't have any new inputs and we're able to kind of put ourselves in a little bubble. So for some people, that's going for a swim, it's playing with their dog or taking their dog for a walk. For me, it's just, I like watering the garden. It's just a little moment where I'm out there with watering the garden and nothing's being asked of me and I can really clear my head. And so finding what your clearing is and making sure that you are planting that throughout your week can be really helpful. Another idea is just checking your own beliefs about how you're relating to your work. And we can have such high expectations of ourselves and we can become really critical of ourselves if we don't meet those standards. And so the idea of, you know, you don't have to do everything 100%. And if it's hard for you to give up that belief, what does 90% look like? Let's start small. What does getting it done 90% look like to take the edge off some of that pressure?
Thank you, Luke.
Thanks, Lisa.
And thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Lisa.
Luke Martin is a senior specialist and clinical spokesperson for Beyond Blue. If you or someone you know needs mental health support, please call Beyond Blue for free 24/7 on 1300 224 636. We'll put up a link on our website as well. And Ben Searle is an organisational psychologist, consultant and researcher. You can follow him on LinkedIn and take part in his daily burnout prevention activities for the month of November. You can email us and we'll send you a copy of Ben's Recovember calendar so you can do the challenge yourself. Write to us at thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. And if you are interested in hearing about how burnout became its own area of research, you can search The Burnout Shop in our back catalogue, where I speak with Christina Maslach, who is Emeritus Professor of Psychology at the University of California and is the original researcher who identified and labelled burnout. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, subscribe to our podcast, share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.